the most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to hour number three of Sports Talk with Vince Ferrara and Jimmy Hines. We are going to be joined shortly by John McClain, but before we do, the Coyotes 3-1 over the Preds with less than 4 minutes left. That series tied at 1-1. We're now joined by John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. John, how are you?
I'm doing great, Jimmy. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Thank you for joining us. I want to get your take on New Orleans and Tampa Bay, both getting rooms at hotels so that any staff members, any players could kind of sequester themselves. Do you like that move, and do you think that other NFL teams will follow suit?
Well, first of all, it's voluntary. A player doesn't have to stay there if he doesn't want to, because you can't make them do that because of the collective bargaining agreement. But, of course, players are going to do it. And if somebody raised the question, will Tom Brady sequester to Tampa hotel and not see his wife and kids? Somehow I doubt that. I would think if teams were going to do that, they already would have made plans to do it. Tampa being the second one, New Orleans going to do it in preseason. So who knows if that'll help them or not. I admire them for looking for ways, just like Denver, when players go on the field, they go under this thing that's like you're going through security screening at a sporting event, and they get sprayed with a mist, even though the COVID-19 is in your body, not outside. But teams are trying to do things that give them the best chance to have the fewest players test positive. Jacksonville's had 12. Several teams, including the Texans, have not had any since they reported. They had a couple in all season. So I like the fact that teams are trying things based on what their experts tell them.
Players have until tomorrow at 4 o'clock to opt out. Do you think we'll see a barrage of players doing that?
I don't think we'll see a barrage at this point. There's already been a barrage. There was, last I counted this morning, there were 55. I'm not sure how many have today, but I'm guessing there will be more. I know Tre'Davious White of the Bills, Pro Bowl cornerback, said he's thinking about it. I'm sure a lot of players are thinking about it. We've been doing Zoom interviews with the Texans, and one of their most prominent outside linebacker, Whitney Merciless, said he has people in his family who have pre-existing conditions, and he's just not going to see them during football season. And I think there's probably not many families, if you're older, that don't have some of these pre-existing conditions. The deal is just stay apart from them until the season's over.
Now, the NFL is going to, even though the deadline's tomorrow at 4, they will allow you to opt out later if you have a family member that's positive or there's a new diagnosis revealing a higher risk for somebody. I would think that only is common sense to allow that. What do you think?
I think that was smart. It also says in there if a family member dies, so they're trying to cover all their bases. I think you have to keep everything open, and I'm wondering, too, if there might have been or will be a couple players who don't like playing for their team, or maybe they don't like the coach, and they just say they don't feel comfortable, take the 150 like they've already made a lot of money, take the season off, and come back next year. What I wonder, 2 years from now, how many players who have opted out will be on the same team in which they've opted out from?
Good question.
Interesting. John, Aaron Rodgers was asked about if there's been any talk with the Packers on keeping quarterbacks maybe separated, any precautions in terms of COVID-19. And he said, no, nothing that I've heard of. Do you think that's unusual?
I don't know, because we don't have access to everybody. I know the Texans, I'll be stunned if they don't keep a quarterback, a kicker, and maybe a deep snapper separate from the team. Bill O'Brien, we asked him about it last week in a Zoom call, and he didn't say he was going to do it. He said every day we try to cover 1,000 bases. And one of the things is not just a quarterback, it's a kicker and a snapper. And I think that would be smart. Some team, I think it's Cincinnati, and you don't equate Cincinnati and smart, but they're talking about keeping all their quarterbacks away. Every meeting is a Zoom meeting. But they're still going to be on the field. But I would keep one player, a quarterback, with a somebody to snap the ball. I would have him in on every meeting, every game plan, all by Zoom, have him working out on a separate field and staying totally away from his teammates. But there are people, guys, who think you're better off around your teammates because that means you're with the team and the team is taking every possible precaution than you being on your own, even if you take every possible precaution. J.J. Watt described what he found at the Texans NRG Stadium and their Houston Methodist Training Center across the street. He described it as being like the Terminator. And he said guys were still trying to find their way around, figure out where they go first. They have three dressing rooms, multiple cafeterias, all the doorways are face recognition. And he said once everybody figures out the logistics, then things should be smoother.
So by covering all your bases, you mean like John Gruden telling his Raiders team that he had COVID when he didn't just to see how they would react?
Yeah, I don't think anybody go that far. I think with Gruden, you know, Sean Payton had it. Doug Peterson has it now. And a lot of people, you know, I'm wondering if it'll ever be like the flu. Somebody gets it and we just say, hey, he's got the flu. He'll be back when he recovers. Because most people do not get seriously ill. Most don't have to go to the hospital. And the younger and the healthier you are, the less likely you are to be in bad shape. We see players, as soon as they can pass those tests, they're back. And if you do something stupid, like go to a strip club or go anywhere where there's more than 10 people, then you get quarantined and you're going to miss a game, maybe two. So one of the things I would do if I was a head coach, I would tell the players, if you violate those rules, not only are you going to miss a game or two while you're quarantined, and you're going to miss the pay, and then you could be suspended without pay, I'm going to make you come up here in front of this room and explain to every teammate why you broke the rules, why you were so selfish or ignorant or both, to put your teammates in jeopardy. And I would think that'd be a pretty good deterrent to hear a coach say that a player's going to have to answer to all the whole team.
John, Matthew Stafford put out a release when he was reactivated from the reserve COVID-19 list. And they were, I guess it might have been the Lions on behalf of Matthew Stafford, explaining that he did not have COVID-19, that it was a false positive test. Have you heard about many of those false positive tests in the National Football League?
Well, first of all, I was told by doctors at Houston Medical Center, which is the best in the country, that about 20% can be false positive. That's why players get tested multiple days in a row. But I don't understand how they would know that. Maybe he just got over it. And remember, it doesn't really do any good for players to play a game and get tested the next day because you can wait 5 days before it gets in your system. And that's why it's so scary for a team that plays on Sunday and starts undergoing tests. Oh, yeah, they're negative. They're doing great when it might not be in your system until 5 days later. And that's 2 days before the next game.
Let's go to the phones where Tom joins us. Tom, you're on with John McClain.
Hey guys, thanks for taking my call. I've been curious if this is if any major stadiums at all have been considering this, which is do a test run for admission. Because I know even if they do 20, like say Neyland does allows only 25% of fans per game, that's about 25,000 people. So if we're going to do like temperature checks, we're going to do all this stuff. You kind of have to. I know like Disney World and Dollywood, they all did test runs where they had select people come through just to get an idea of, like, what do we need to do, you know, how are we going to do temperature checks, are we going to, you know, how are we going to enforce masks and some of it, because they need to do basically mock runs. And I was kind of curious, are any of these stadiums considering this, or are all these going to be like, well, if they say we can have fans, we're going to do it or not? Because I feel like if they need to be ready for, like, A, B, C, or D different scenarios of whatever is going to be allowed. And I'm just curious if any of the, if we've heard of any stadiums or arenas even are looking into this.
Tom, that's a good question. Thanks for the call. I'll be stunned if there's fans in the stands. What would be the point? I mean, like in Texas, we set records almost every day. Same thing in Florida, Arizona, California. What would be the point of bringing in 25,000 fans? Every team has a plan for bringing in fans from half the stadium down to a quarter of the stadium. And I don't even understand why somebody want to go to a game under these conditions. Now, I don't know what it is in college football, but in the NFL, if you want to come to a game, you can't tailgate. You have to wear a mask, of course. You have to come into the game at a certain time is designated. When you're coming in, you have to be 6 feet from the people in front of you. No telling how far that line is going to stretch. You have to keep your mask on at all times. You might be in the upper reaches of the end zone. You might be on the 50. When you go to the bathroom, you have a designated bathroom. You have to, like for the men, every other urinal shut down the line and trying to keep people 6 feet from each other. We'd be out the door, down the concourse, kind of like they are for the women's restrooms at sporting events and concerts. And you'd have to leave at your designated time. Nobody could sit around you anywhere except family members. How do they even know it's family members? Are they going to have a bathroom police where some security guard's in there? Excuse me, sir, you're not 6 feet from the guy who's trying to go to the restroom. And, you know, do you want to go and use a restroom that hasn't been cleaned that strangers have been in? And you don't know if they've got the virus. You know, taking a temperature doesn't do squat except show you you could possibly have it. They're not going to administer tests. I just don't know why anybody would want to risk it, including administrators, because if people get sick with COVID-19, they can't prove it happened at the game, but you know the lawyers will line up to sue the school, to sue the state, the county, everybody they can to try to get a money grab.
John, will you cover Titans games at home? Will you go to the ball games?
I asked the Texans media relations director this week if they'd had anything with the league yet about how much media is going to be allowed at games. I think the first game Texans play Kansas City, I'll be there because you're going to have protests, you're going to have kneeling, you're going to have Bill O'Brien, the head coach, taking a knee. That'll just set off fans around the country. You know, the NBA and Major League Baseball's had people kneel, but it hadn't created nearly the controversy that the NFL does, mainly because the NFL is more popular. But and you're going to have Arrowhead Stadium empty. So the atmosphere, you can't get it on TV. You know, the TV is a national anthem. By the time they come back from the national anthem, it's going to be all over Twitter from people in the press box about who took a knee, who did this. So I think, you know, you've got to be there. The key is how many are they going to allow? The Houston Chronicle has 8 credentials to home games, 3 on the road. There's no way we would get 8 for home games if everybody's social distancing.
Our guest, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. We're talking NFL. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk 99.1, The Sports Animal.
Thanks for listening and making 99.1 The Sports Animal number one for sports conversation at work.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferraro. Got a final. Coyotes 4, Preds 1. Series now 2-1 in favor of the Coyotes. John McClain is our special guest. He is with the Houston Chronicle. We're talking NFL.
John, we talk a lot about the player opt-outs, but we haven't really heard about coach opt-outs, and they would seem to be in the biggest risk because there are a number of older coaches. Is this just something that the coaches feel pressured to stay in those positions? Do you think it might happen before long? What do you think about that coach opt-out aspect?
there hadn't been any take it that I know. Texans had a great special teams coordinator, Brad Seeley, one of the best in NFL history. He retired, and it was kind of unexpected, but that was 2 months ago. And coaches don't have a union negotiating for them like the players do. And I think coaches, too, they know how fleeting the job is. If a coach opts out and they hire somebody to take his place, there's a good chance he ain't getting his job back. They would never say because of that, but that's a fact. I think that's one reason that coaches don't opt out. They're worried about the consequences.
John, what do you make of what we're hearing out of Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers? There's a lot of discussion, LaFleur comments, Rodgers comments, and discussing in what Aaron Rodgers, what the situation might look like, and Rodgers' future. What do you make of these exchanges going back and forth with those?
Vince, I don't make anything about it because it doesn't mean squat. Nobody can say what's going to happen to Aaron Rodgers. They don't know if Jordan Love's any good at all. Patriots passed on him, and they needed a quarterback. And I can't imagine that and Matt LaFleur, the Packers coach, said this week that he envisions Rodgers being there a long time. And the natural question was, well, then why did you draft Jordan Love unless you think he might get to play in some preseason and you could get a higher number one for him, which is never going to happen. It's obvious there. Aaron's getting up. He's 36, I think, or 37. He has said he wants to play into his 40s. That would mean he'd play way beyond Jordan Love's 5 years. So it's going to be a constant source of speculation, and the Packers knew they were going to get it as soon as they made that move.
John, Derek Carr, Raiders, said he's tired of being disrespected. Does he deserve more respect?
Well, it depends on what he calls disrespect. You know, he got a $100 million contract early in his career. That's not disrespect. I guess he's talking about the Raiders. Nobody's picking them to win the division. I haven't seen yet people picking them to go to the playoffs. They had a losing record last year. He had a good season, but he's not an elite quarterback. Now, I'll be surprised if he's with the team beyond this season unless he plays great and they make the playoffs, because Gruden will have played with him for, is this 3 years now? Then it's about time Gruden's going to want his guy.
Cam Jordan of the Saints said of Tampa Bay, they've got the second greatest quarterback of all time behind Drew Brees. Now they'll go head-to-head a couple of times. We've got our work cut out for us. They've added Gronk and McCoy. They got 2 1,000-yard receivers. This is a team fighting for second place. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's great. That's the way he should feel. You know, everybody loves Drew Brees. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. He's got one Super Bowl ring. I think that Brady's got 6. So I don't know of anybody outside New Orleans and maybe Southern Louisiana that would say Brees is better than Brady, who is the greatest of all time.
Which teams do you think have the best chance to make the playoffs who didn't make them a year ago? Always there are a bunch of them. I'm going to run through some teams, and you tell me if you disagree with any of them or if you feel strong about one over another. Pittsburgh, Tampa Bay.
Yes.
Dallas.
Pittsburgh and yeah. One in each conference. Pittsburgh yeah. And Tampa Bay.
What about
Cowboys
Dallas?
Right now, they got a chance to make the playoffs. Of course, they should win their division. Their division's not very good. Philadelphia's not that good. So Cowboys, I don't think, will make a wild card. They need to win the NFC East.
Raiders?
No.
Rams?
Yes, they were 9-7 a year after going to the Super Bowl. They've made a lot of changes. The most notable to me was not on the roster. It was running off defensive coordinator Wade Phillips, who's now in Atlanta. And I told you guys before, and I'll tell you again, everywhere Wade goes, they make the playoffs in the first year. So ask me if I think Atlanta's going to make it.
Atlanta.
Yes. I can't give you any other reason than Wade Phillips and that stat.
I have to ask you the obligatory Antonio Brown question because it's resurfaced. Do you think someone's going to give him an opportunity after the NFL said they were going to give him his suspension?
You know, he's got a sexual assault suit, civil suit from a woman, and it was very well documented in a story by Robert Klemklo. I can't remember if Robert did it for the Washington Post, where he is now, or at SI before he left SI. But it was very, very in-depth and good. And so on top of his eight-game suspension, he's got this sexual assault issue. He's a quitter. He's quit on Mike Tomlin, John Gruden, and Bill Belichick, three Super Bowl winning coaches. He's a head case. Lamar Jackson showed his how naive he is and ignorant, or both, when he said he's not a quitter and he'd be great in our locker room. Well, he has not been great in locker rooms, and he's quit on his teammates, his fans, and himself. And if you want to take a chance on a head case like that, you deserve all the bad things you're going to get.
John, we've asked you about the Titans before, but now that they're in the camp and we're getting a little bit closer to the year, maybe some of the personnel for other teams in the AFC South, how do you view the Titans right now?
I think the Titans and the Texans will compete for the division as they did last year. Texans are trying to win it for the fifth time in 6 years. Titans are trying to win it for the first time since 2008, which was the last time they had a record better than 9-7. Indianapolis thinks by signing Phillip Rivers that Rivers will bounce back and not play like he did last year, and that would make it a three-team race. And remember, one more team makes the playoffs in each conference this year, so that gives renewed hope. But I think it's going to be a tough division, a fun division, and as it usually does, it'll come down to injuries and now possibly COVID-19. And I'll tell you something that I thought about the other day. The Marlins, I think, have played three games. Other teams have played 10. And the Marlins are 3-1. And if the season ended tomorrow and you went by winning percentage and the Marlins made the playoffs, they would be glad they'd gotten COVID-19 way back in August because it helped them have a better winning percentage.
John, what are you working on with Texas Sports Nation?
Jimmy, we got podcasts, got columns, got stories. I'm writing one tomorrow about the Texans' offensive and defensive coordinators. While they've been with the team, they're calling plays for the first time and the pressure that they will be under. We did Zooms today with 11 assistant coaches. We'll have a lot about them. I appreciate you guys having me on. Vince, always fun being on with you. And Jimmy, thank you. And you guys stay safe.
John, thank you. Always enjoy visiting with you. That's John McClain. Does a terrific job. He's with the Houston Chronicle. A great follow at McClain_on_NFL. And we always enjoy him. He's been with us for a number of years. We go year-round with him because there's so much to talk about with the NFL, and we thank him for his appearance. When we come back, we're going to talk about another NCAA decision. We'll also talk about Tennessee's football team and where they're ranked in the Fox Sports preseason top 25 poll. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Heim. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
I'm VFL Charles Davis, and it's
52 days until
it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go on!
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. We heard earlier that the NCAA Division III canceling all fall sports championships. Now they have canceled all Division II sports championships. Vince, do you think they will cancel any Division I sports championships?
Well, I don't know what the NCAA is going to decide on, but Jimmy, I wouldn't look at these cases and say, see, this is what inevitably was going to happen for all of college athletics. A big part, and they admitted it today, a big part of these decisions for these lower divisions is money, is the finances of it. They are not in the position to overcome the loss of revenue or regenerate it by having a season, and therefore they're different types of budgetary and health concern decisions. And, you know, some of it is logistical. Others, you know, there's other, you know, maybe staffing challenges, administrator. There's probably a long list of things, and health and safety, I'm sure, is part of it. But if you don't have those other resources to make sure that you can, A, play the games and then do it safely, then you make those decisions. The Power Five conferences are in a different financial situation. Doesn't guarantee that they're going to be able to pull it off, but it's different. And, you know, we talked to Brad Edwards earlier, and he pointed out with UConn that, look, a big factor was the rules state that you can't, if you travel and return to the state of Connecticut, you have to quarantine for 14 days. Can't play football games that way and just shut down. So they are dealing with, even within the D1, there's a big discrepancy on the logistics, and then each area has a different situation. But when you get to those lower divisions, there's just not the revenue there. So I think those are different, and I wouldn't automatically – it's sad. Believe me, I'm not downplaying it. I think it is extraordinarily sad that this is happening to so many kids. But I don't think it's an automatic tie or precursor to D1 or FBS, you know, shutting down and we weren't going to have it. I wouldn't tie those two together. What about you? Do you look at it differently?
No, I don't think they're going to shut it down. However, if they do try to shut down some fall sports championships, then there was a report by Sports Illustrated that the Power Five is considering holding its own championships of the fall sports for the Olympic sports in the fall that might get shut down, which could be an interesting power play in that regard. So I don't think they're going to do it. But, I mean, let's face it, there are basically two programs in college football at any level that make money. One is football, right, and the other one is men's basketball. Now, every now and then, there's a school that might do okay with women's basketball. There might be a couple of schools out baseball. There that might make some money with baseball. LSU comes to mind, but there aren't many. So the overwhelming majority of the sports, women's basketball and baseball, lose money. And the only consistent money makers are men's basketball and football. So I'll be curious to see where that goes in terms of whether the NCAA decides to shut down any Division I sports. I think they're going to leave it alone because I don't think they want to have a battle of the Power Five or some others jumping in there and say, well, we'll host our own if you're not going to do it. So.
Right. And then Jimmy, you know, if the NCAA was to make a decision like that for the FBS, it could actually take some of those individual schools off the hook by saying, look, the NCAA did it, now you can't blame us if we don't field the team this year or whatever, because those championships have been done away from, versus the teams having to make individual decisions while maybe others can move forward, which of course would be more scrutinized or tougher for the individual players. But man, is it a mess.
It is, and it's a shame, as you pointed out, with a lot of them. Now, I've already seen this, so as of now, as far as some college football out there, Oklahoma is scheduled to open its season August the 29th. The conference games in the Big 12 will not be played until mid to late September. TCU and UNLV have apparently agreed to play August the 29th. West Virginia is expected to play against an unnamed opponent at this point, August the 29th. So I think it's really interesting that basically the Big 12 is going to start playing non-conference games a month before the SEC and the Pac-12 kick it off. That's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and Jimmy, I'm curious, because we talked about this before anyone put out their schedules, is what about the protocols of opposing teams?
Yeah.
Are they looking at it from an individual basis and saying, all right, what are you guys doing for testing? Okay, this meets our guidelines and is close enough to us, then we're good. Or how much of that is being taken into consideration? You know, you would think it would be, but with some of the stories we're hearing in college athletics, maybe it's more of a money decision than anything else. But that's interesting that they're ending up having to schedule these group of fives. And why wouldn't the Big 12, I know the answer to this, but I'll pose it anyway. Why wouldn't the Big 12 get together with the ACC for their plus one?
Yeah.
And some of those teams aren't that far away from each other. West Virginia is one that comes to mind. But the reason is because they don't want to put themselves in a tougher position for a college football playoff. So that's the answer to that.
But you only have a couple of teams from each of those conferences that are college football playoff caliber. What about the other eight or so teams in those conferences?
I agree, but they're leaving it up to each individual school. I was talking about more, hey, let's work together so we can, it doesn't have to be everybody, but you can, get half your schools or plug up those holes by more of the Big 12 ACC type of matchups, even in an unofficial type of challenge type of thing. But I think the college football playoff, like we were talking about with Brad, they don't want to put themselves in a situation where they're hurting themselves with for the college football playoff, just like he was talking about with the SEC scenarios. If they're worried about the playoff, they're probably not going to match up good team versus good team because it's always about the losses. So I think that's the answer on why the ACC and the Big 12, even if they only have a couple of candidates, why they're not going to pair up and say, hey, let's get a good game here together. It's because of the playoff.
We brought this up with Dave Nathan when we visited with him last week, and he's over there covering North Carolina. We asked him, do you think that all the ACC teams are going to actually play a non-conference game? And I think the answer to that's going to be no. I don't think all of them are. Obviously, they were trying to hold on to Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida, Florida State, Clemson, South Carolina, Kentucky, Louisville. But then when the SEC went in another direction, I don't think all of them are going to end up playing an extra conference, a non-conference game. Do you?
No. And another reason is because of the parameters that the league put in play that you had to play in the home state of your ACC representative, which really limits the options. And I haven't heard anything like that, and clearly it's not. If TCU's talking to UNLV, then again, a game could be at TCU in Fort Worth. So I haven't heard any parameters like that for the Big 12. But, yeah, you could very well have that. And then it's going to put the selection committee in even more of a bind where they can't compare the true conferences because they don't have those reference points, as Brad was talking about. So it is the reality of it, Jimmy, might be even if they were on a level playing field in terms of the schedule going in, that the reality of it is that you may, even within your conference, may have teams playing different number of games when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think that to be the case. All right. Fox Sport has come out with its preseason top 25. The Tennessee Vols are number 24 in this preseason poll. I think that's about right. I don't have a lot of qualms with that. I've got Tennessee going, well, I had them going 8-4. Now I haven't really figured out what I got them going because I hadn't seen their schedule yet. But I think that's a fair projection of what Tennessee could do is to be the number 24 team in the country. Where do you see Tennessee?
Yeah, I see them in the late teens, early 20s. I mean, anywhere from that 18 to 25, I think, is what you're looking for in terms of a 8-4, previously 8-4 type of team. Be interesting to see where the projected win total, where that moves for a lot of us once we see the actual schedule, because it's not just who you play, it's when you play them. Jimmy, maybe does one team end up getting three straight home games in the middle of the schedule to make all this work, or three straight road games? Or do you play one team, do you play two really difficult physical games back-to-back on the road? It's hard to know and make those win total projections when we haven't seen all of those factors involved. Another thing would be, I know you're not going to have the home field advantage that you normally would because of the fans, but Jimmy, does the stress of travel and the unknown about what the visiting team's facilities and all that, does that add any extra stress and maybe teams are tighter on the road? I don't know. So I wonder about some of that also. But until we fully see the schedule, I don't know. But I'm still guessing the Tennessee fans, however it lays out, will still be optimistic and thinking 7+ with even with an SEC only school. That's just a guesstimate, but we'll see how the schedule lays out.
I was talking with John Adams with the New Sentinel this morning, and then Brad Edwards brought it up, but we were talking about how the SEC might consider making sure that they don't overschedule for teams that have the potential to be in the college football playoff. In other words, Florida, there's no way they're going to play Alabama and Texas A&M. And those are the next two opponents from the crossover. So that thought was out there that they're not doing that.
Yeah. You're nixing, based on just that, you're nixing the crossover model, Jimmy.
I am. You know what might happen? You might have a crossover model for some teams and not for others. If it's appropriate.
And, the conspiracy model is what the model that may likely get picked.
Oh, is that a conspiracy? Oh, okay.
Well, no, I'm saying fans would say that is a conspiracy to put Alabama in there and against their team. That's just the common thing anyway.
Yeah, and I'll be curious to see that strength of schedule, how it's rated and but Brad Edwards brought that up, and it just reminded me of the conversation that I had with John Adams this morning about that very thing and trying to figure out this schedule. We do think the SEC is going to release the schedule this week, and it was Philip Fulmer that said that last week that he anticipated that. So that's the reason I think it'll come out, and it may be tomorrow. I guess it could be tonight. Well, no, it's after 5. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say 7:02 p.m. Friday evening, I think, is when we may see that schedule, especially if their favors, it looks like their favors for Alabama. That's when it could be released. But on that topic, I mean, John is the perfect person to talk to about that kind of thing. And, and you we kind of alluded to it too, Jimmy, the SEC when in that situation with, you know, you do a air quote strength of schedule model, but maybe you have an Alabama, Florida, Georgia exception in there to where, you know, they can't, or an LSU, like they can't meet, but do the rest strength of schedule and see what the computers spit out. So who knows?
There has been some speculation out there, and I'm not ready to go there, that Tennessee is going to play LSU. But I don't know that. I've just seen that out there on Twitter. And we all know that if you see it on Twitter, it's got to be accurate. But, so that's out there. We'll see what transpires. But I don't have any factual information in regard to exactly what they're going to do. So, but I do think it's going to be very interesting. And you know that as soon as that schedule comes out, we're going to start hearing it. Well, wait a minute. They get that team. Yep. They get that team. So that'll be fun to follow. All right. When we come back, we'll have more. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Heim. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Sports all the time. It's not a lifestyle we chose. We were born this way. 99.1, the Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk with Vince Ferrar. I'm Jimmy Himes. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. I thought this was an interesting fact Tom Brady has won 5 Super Bowls since the last time Tampa Bay won a playoff game. Brady's won 5 Super Bowls since the last time Tampa Bay won a playoff game. Vince, I probably should have earlier, but I am becoming more and more convinced that Tampa Bay is going to have a really good football team. I wasn't sure right away. They had had such a losing mentality and losing culture for many, many years. But, gosh, I think Brady and Gronkowski and McCoy and I think Bruce Arians is a really good coach. Gosh, I think they got a chance to be really good. I'm not ready to say, hey, I think they're a Super Bowl caliber team, but I think they got a chance to be a really good team that's going to easily make the playoffs. What do you think about Tampa Bay?
I agree with you, and then don't forget about the subtraction of Jameis Winston.
Yeah.
So I think you take out a lot of the volatility, the highs and lows, the roller coaster ride, the frustrations, that comes out, and then you go to Tom Brady and how he is going to impact his teammates and the culture there, Gronkowski, and bringing the swagger, confidence, and ability. I think all those things, and then other veterans as well. Everything I hear is that there was actual video of Tom Brady throwing passes on the Bucks practice field. That was because some people still like can't believe he's actually there. Like it was some make believe internet story. But I agree with you. I think they're a playoff team. I still would have them behind the New Orleans Saints, but it's not a runaway. Oh yeah, I like that reaction. But I don't agree with Cam Jordan whether he should or shouldn't have said it. That they're fighting for second place. I mean, that could end up on a T-shirt. I'm sure it will if they win the division. That here's the fighting for second place division championship or whatever. So they'll use that for motivation. But they're I think they're a really good team, and I think they have a chance to be not just a wild card playoff team, but a double digit win team.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're very dangerous. And the thing is, they actually won a number of ball games last year in spite of having a 30-interception quarterback. And so you know the quarterback play is going to be better. You know that the efficiency there is going to be better. And then there's the culture and the confidence that comes with that. So I got to – and here's the other thing, too, and I can't cite many examples, but we have seen teams that turned it around quickly and the Rams years ago with Kurt Warner went from like 13-3 to winning the Super Bowl. I think the Rams under Sean McVay had a bad team and were really good the next year. We've seen teams that weren't very good that turned it around in a hurry the next year for a variety of reasons.
And 49ers last year.
Yeah, and wasn't that part of it was Garoppolo was hurt the previous year?
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
But that's a factor. I mean, yeah, so it can happen. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought, shoot, Tampa Bay is a team that could do that. And I think they're really dangerous. I think they're very dangerous. I think Pittsburgh with Roethlisberger back is very dangerous. You know, it's kind of funny. I actually think those two teams are more dangerous than the Dallas Cowboys. And I say that in part because – I think there might be discord within the ranks of the Dallas Cowboys. I may be wrong, but I'm not sure that I know you can say, oh, well, these guys are professional. All this money talk doesn't bother them. I'm not so sure that's always true.
You mean in regards to Dak Prescott's contract or
yes.
where?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Dak's deal and maybe he will handle it well. I don't know how well McCarthy is going to do. I thought the hire was a good hire. But there's just something about what's going on with it. There's no way Dallas should have been 8-8 last year. I mean, You can blame some of it on coaching, but my goodness, whenever it came crunch time, the players didn't respond either. So there's just something going on in Dallas that I don't like in terms of feeling like, hey, they're ready to jump in there and win 10 or 11 games next year. I'm not there with them. They may prove me wrong, but I, I think there's just something missing about that team and that franchise right now.
Well, and you could be right. The big factor is how much does Mike McCarthy help change that culture?
Yes.
That's one. Two, I think you're going to have better play calling offensively than you did a year ago, which was I think, an issue for them. And then another thing is what you brought up. There's no way they should have finished with the record they did and not win that division with the talent they have. That's why people have confidence that they can improve this year with their draft and improve coaching. With the talent there, they should improve in record and thus, to the view of many, still win that division. The key for me, Jimmy, I'm not really worried about the Dak contract thing. I think he's such a pro that when he gets out there, he will handle his teammates great and I think play well, especially if he's got better coaching on that side of the ball. My biggest concern for them is their defense. Is their defense good enough for them to make that jump into the playoffs? That's where I still have some questions with them, even though they have some individual talent.
That's Vince Ferrara. I'm Jimmy Himes, and we come back. We will have the sports fix at 6. We've also got some Tennessee basketball numbers about what they returned from last year in terms of production. And I think it's pretty impressive. So we'll talk about that as well, and we'll take your phone calls. If you want to join us, 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. And remember those numbers for the Sports Fix. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes, Sports Talk, 99.1, The Sports Animal.